And now, with Sound Investing, here's Paul Merriman.
Before I talk about the series that we just completed, where we focused on these eight big investment decisions, I want to talk with you about two important things going on in my life, because this podcast is being recorded in Rancho Mirage, just outside of Palm Springs, because after several years ago selling our home in San Miguel as a place to go for sun in the winter, we have finally settled on what we know is almost a guaranteed hot spot in the winter, and that's out here in the Coachella Valley. It's a great place. We've already made a number of new friends. We're here at a very hot time of the year, but it's about to get a whole lot hotter, so we're getting out of here in about 2 hours, but we have kind of moved in and expect to hopefully spend 5 or so months every year here doing what I enjoy doing, and that is having fun with my wife and having the time to work on the foundation. So this is not time off for me. This is just maybe in the winter a better place to be talking with you. The other thing, and this is huge to me, when I retired in 2012 and started the foundation, I had no idea I was going to be doing a regular podcast or a regular article for Market Watch, or the videos that we would be doing. Daryl Balls had not joined our foundation, and Chris Pedersen hadn't joined our foundation. There's just so many things that have happened since when we first began the foundation. But the reason in the beginning was to put money aside to support a class at Western. And the school thought it would be a good idea to endow it. I didn't want to endow it with the school. Instead, I kind of endowed it through the foundation. And every year we would send money to Western to underwrite the teaching of the personal investing class that was designed to be for non-finance majors. But I wanted more. I wanted more for the students because, yes, every year 200 plus students would take the course, but I wanted something, and I have been lobbying for 10 years to have a program where every student who comes through Western, about 15,000 in total, will have as a requirement what one might call a life skills course, and part of that would be about investing, about budgeting, about learning how to be wise on money matters rather than being the tool of the system and doing what they want, and that is not exactly the kind of course that universities are normally so interested in. But after lobbying for many years and having the full confidence and support from the business and economics department, finally all of the deans, it took all of the deans of the different colleges at Western to approve that this was a good thing. And so in the coming years, it takes a little time to get it into the curriculum, but it is now a program that has been approved once they work the bugs out. And I have been glad to be financially supportive and certainly want to have a chance to be involved in some of the teaching there. That's a big deal. I signed my life away to be supportive of it, not just from the view of the foundation, but in our estate, so that we make sure that there's plenty of plenty of money to support this program in the future. But I think it's going to be a real life changer for many of these young people. Somebody told me that about 50% of the students who attend their freshman year at Western are first-generation college students. So this is just a huge opportunity. And oh, by the way, as it all rolled out, not only will all the students be benefited, but the staff at Western is going to be benefited by these courses, as well as creating a continuing education program for adults in the markets where Western has campuses, and finally, again, where they have campuses to work with the local high schools. So for me, this is a home run. I am hoping that once this is fully implemented at Western, that it will be something that the other state institutions will take a look at and doing something similar themselves. Only somebody else is going to have to write the checks. But I think it will be a wonderful, wonderful opportunity to educate more people. So there's that. But I know what's been on your mind lately. I know that we have recorded these eight different podcasts on these separate important decisions, whether it's what equity asset classes, how to combine them, how to add fixed income, how to take money out when we get to retirement. Each one of these topics at some level have to do with how much money you're going to make, how much you're going to have to spend, and how much you're going to have to leave. And of course, what we would all like is some message from above that will tell us this is how the market should perform. And each year, I get the latest Matrix book. This comes out of Dimensional Funds. I am able to see most of the major asset classes, some of them going back to 1928 and 1926. I am able easily to see from one point to another how much money would have been made, whether I started an investment in 1928 and wanted to look to see how did it do by 1957. I can quickly, with these tables, the way they're constructed, see what that return would be. And the reality is that when you look at this book long enough, you're going to see that it's pretty obvious that a lot of the success of an investor will have to do with the time that they start or the time that they finish, or in terms of their estate, maybe the time that they die, where that portfolio is at that moment in time. But I thought it would be worthwhile to give you at least a brief overview as to some of the things that I see in this book that I think would be of interest to you in trying to figure out kind of what next. Now, there are two kinds of what next questions I get. Some of those questions have to do with the very long term and something we just can't know. I was found it very interesting that Bill Gates was quoted in 1981 as saying that the internet is just a fad. So even Bill Gates at that point did not see what that future could be, and boy, what a future it has been. So we can't see, and in fact, we don't even know if there's something about the markets today that have caused them to change. But let me just take you to a couple of levels and see if any of this is helpful in you getting your bearings on the kinds of returns that you might achieve. Now, I don't want to overlook that what we have suggested in the past is to look at the range of the best and the worst and the average of the major equity asset classes. And I will make sure that we have a link in the notes that show the 95-year return and then the 15 years and then the 40-year periods. So you can see, in essence, the best and worst of returns for these different periods. But let me just share some of what I think are, to me, very interesting outcomes. In one page, a DFA lays it out so that I can look at the compound rates of return for 1, 5, 10, 15, 20, 50, and 80 years. Now, I can tell you there aren't very many of the asset classes that go out as long as 80 years. They would be the what would be the total market index, the S&P 500, large cap value, small cap blend, small cap value, and that would be it. And I'll report on some of the others, but in terms of going out 80 years, I can't give it to you. But here is what I find interesting. We know last year was a bad year for the S&P 500, down about 18%. The total market index was down about 20%. There is a difference in those two indexes, but over a very long period of time, as you'll see, there's only about a 1/8 or 1/10 of 1% difference, if even that. When we go out 5 years, we see the S&P 500 at 9.4%. We see large cap value at 5.1. We see the small cap blend at 6.2 and small cap value at 7.9. Now, if you remember that quilt chart that goes back to 1928, where we can see the returns in color for the different major four asset classes, including the S&P 500 and large cap value and small cap blend and small cap value. And it was not totally unexpected for there to be a five-year period where the S&P 500 did better, and we just went through one of those. By the time we get out to 10 years, it is interesting to note that the S&P 500 at 12.6, large value 10.4, small blend 10.8, and small value at 11.4. Again, the S&P 500, and not unexpected historically, had the best return. By the time we get out to 20 years, it's amazing how similar the returns are at 20 years, at 50 years, and at 80 years. Now, they're not the same, but they're close enough that if any of them happened to you, you probably would not be disappointed. But the 20-year return for the S&P 500, 9.8, the large cap value, 9, the small cap blend, 11.2, and small cap value, 11.9. Now, that's about a 2% advantage to small cap value. But as we've noted before, you have to go out 20 years to be able to say that the small cap value has been the best in every 20-year period. And by the time we get out to 50 years, the S&P 500 is 10.3. The large cap value is 12.6. The small cap blend is 12.8. And the small cap value is 15.2. And finally, the 80-year performance for the S&P 500, 11.5%. So, the highest return, well, you had a higher return at 10 years, But over the very long term, you had to wait 80 years to get the best of the returns. And by the way, that's from 1943, the year I was born, to 2022. But the S&P 500 was 11.5, large cap value, almost 2% advantage, 13.3, small cap blend, 13.9, and the small cap value, 16.2. Now we know that the kind of returns we've been getting recently haven't been as good. As a matter of fact, there's kind of a turning point, it seems to me. And that turning point is 2000. And the reason that I see it that way is because for the 25 years prior to that, everything just had huge returns. A small cap value was over 22, the S&P 500 over 17. 25 years of great performance. And I don't know that anything has changed for good, but I do know this, that since 2000 through the end of 2022, the S&P 500 compounded at 6.3%, and that does include the dividend. The large cap value, 7.8, small cap value, 12, small cap blend, 9.9. Now, we have the ability, when we started the year 2000, to pick up other asset classes, like certainly small cap growth at 9.2. So small way outperformed large, whether you looked at the S&P 500 or large cap value compared to the small cap blend and small cap value and small cap growth. Small for that period was the better place to be, but I will tell you, the previous 10 years right before this 2000 to 2022, large cap growth was the best of the bunch. And so this will just show you how long periods of time it can take to have things look the way you expect. We have one of the fellows that follows our work writes often, and as he in his just recent email, he was really getting concerned because the large cap tech companies were just knocking the lights out, just doing great. And here he was sitting in small cap value and whatever else he owns that we might have recommended. But boy, if you can't see beyond what's been hot lately, then it is really difficult to have the patience to wait for these things to come to you. Now, the NASDAQ, right now, you could be asked, well, do you wish you'd been in the NASDAQ for a long time? And you might think that you wish you could, but for what it's worth, since 2000, the compound rate was 4.2%. Now, to be fair, I think in that particular case, it did not include dividends. In the other cases, it did. But the dividends in the NASDAQ stocks are not necessarily a major part of that return. Now, the other thing that sticks out like a sore thumb is how the internationals did from 2000 to 2022. Now, if we just showed you 2000 to 2009, you'd say, yeah, I want some of those in my portfolio. But when you look at that whole period, the international large cap blend was 3.8, including dividends. The small cap blend was 7.8. Small cap value was 9.6. Large cap value, 5.6. And small cap growth, 9.3. The bottom line is that for this entire period of time, whether you were U.S. or international, small was doing better than large. And value was doing better than growth for the entire period. So does that help you? Well, the fact is, it doesn't help you. It just gives you a sense that the market for the last 20-some years, but there is something in there that does give me a sense of confidence. And again, it's confidence without being able to see the future. But as I look at all of these numbers going back 20, 50, 80 years, or going back to 2000, one of the things that I notice is that with few exceptions, particularly over the long term, small does better than large. And value does better than growth. And as you all know, most of our portfolios include some large and include some growth as a part of a massively diversified approach to investing. But the fact that we are tilting our portfolios to more small than a market portfolio would. Remember, a market portfolio, you can see it in the total market index. You would have less than 10% of your portfolio, as I remember it. I don't have it right here in front of me, but 10 or maybe 12% would be small cap. And also you would find that you wouldn't have as much value in the portfolio as what we're suggesting. So there is no question the portfolios that we are recommending, whether it's the more small than you would otherwise get in a market-based capital-weighted portfolio and more value, more small, more value, in the hopes that the next 80 years will look like the last 80 years, or we could even say the next 20-some years would look like the last 20-some years, because small did do better than large, and value did do better than growth. So we can see it over relatively short periods of time and obviously very, very long periods of time. And now I have a favor to ask of all of you. Chris and Daryl have had some other projects they've been working on called Life. And there's more to their life than working on our foundation. But they do give a lot of their time, and that's coming up. They're going to be back involved more actively. And the reason I'm asking you now is because I want to get together the best 10 or 20 questions I can that came out of these eight particular recent podcasts and videos and articles that we did in what we called the Investors Boot Camp series. But if you do have questions, one of them, I know what it is. I still get it. And that is the question between the additional diversification within the ultimate buy and hold strategy versus the four fund strategy, whether it be the four U.S. or the four international. I promise we'll talk about that again. Let's make it easy here. In this particular case, if you got the time to think about it right now, I want you to email me, paul@paulmerriman.com. Wanted to come direct to me so that I can get working on that, and we'll have that will be a fun podcast and video for the three of us to do. I also think that we're about to have the update on the that our lifetime investment calculator. So we'll have Craig back in the coming weeks to talk about that. And as always, I hope you'll continue to share this information with others. Thank you for those of you who have donated to our cause. We appreciate that. And of course, we are a 501c3 organization, tax deductible, depending on how you're making that contribution. And of course, we always appreciate it when you forward the links to the We're Talking Millions book, as well as Two Funds for Life. They're free with that link, and we're finding that to be a really an efficient way to reach and start getting new people to come to us. They are coming to us with a lot of good knowledge, which I think is helpful for a site like ours where there's so much that you can dig into. So thanks for listening, and thanks for being here with me in the new house in Rancho Mirage. It's a pleasure to have you, and for those of you who are Western alum, I hope you'll share the joy that I have in knowing that our fellow alum are going to get some information that we will all wish we had gotten when we went to college.
That was Paul Merriman with Sound Investing. Sound Investing, soundinvesting.com, and paulmerriman.com are produced and exclusively owned by Paul Merriman, who is solely responsible for their content. For more information, free articles, mutual fund recommendations, and more, visit paulmerriman.com.